Greetings, mysterious listeners, and welcome to day one of our first ever Patreon pledge drive. One of the goals of this pledge drive is to raise funds for our new recording space. The last few months have seen us move from location to location while we try to find a permanent recording spot. In the weeks to come, you'll continue to hear slight, or maybe not so slight, variations in our sound environment. For example, the next few episodes were recorded in the Black Box Theater at the Center for the Performing Arts in Minneapolis, giving the sound a distinctly live quality. We invite you, then, to imagine yourself in the front row as the house lights fade and voices begin to quiet. In the darkness, you hear an evil cackle and the distant sound of thunder.
Listening Society Podcast.
Welcome to the Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society, a podcast dedicated to suspense, crime, and horror stories from the golden age of radio. I'm Eric.
I'm Tim.
And I'm Joshua.
We love mysterious old-time radio stories, but do they stand the test of time? That's what we're here to find out.
Today marks the beginning of our Patreon pledge drive. If you already support this podcast, thank you. If you don't, we hope to change your mind with a month of bonus episodes, Patreon previews, and special releases like the one you're about to hear.
We return to the serialized era of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, for a five-part discussion of The McCormick Matter, starring the one and only Bob Bailey as Johnny Dollar. Episodes will be released daily, allowing you to enjoy the story in its original serialized format.
But what does a Johnny Dollar serial have to do with becoming a patron of the podcast? Well, if you enjoy hearing us talk about radio serials, you'll love our Patreon-only podcast, Cliffhangers of Doom. We're making the first episode available for free so you can hear what you're missing. It's a rollicking discussion of City of the Dead Episode 1 from Adventures by Morris. Give it a listen and then go to patreon.com/themorals to find out more about becoming a patron.
And now, back to the podcast.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, debuted on CBS December 8, 1949. Described as America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator, Johnny Dollar narrated each story in the form of an action-packed expense account. Although it's hard to imagine now, Dollar came very close to signing his famous expense account with a different name. According to the audition script, the show was originally titled Yours Truly, Lloyd London, a not-so-subtle nod to the real-world insurance company Lloyd's of London. At the last second, CBS decided to play it safe and change the character's name to something less litigious.
Many actors portrayed Johnny Dollar over the program's 12-year run. The very first was actor and singer Dick Powell. He recorded the show's pilot episode, but turned down the role in favor of the lead in Richard Diamond, Private Detective. Charles Russell, Edmund O'Brien, and John Lund followed Powell, each actor spending roughly 2 years in the role.
CBS canceled the series in 1954, only to revive it again in 1955 with a new man in the lead, Bob Bailey, best known for his portrayal of George Valentine in the comedy-turned-detective series Let George Do It. Bailey's performance retained the hard-boiled edge of his predecessors, but tempered it with moments of humor, emotional vulnerability, and a genuine concern for people in need.
CBS also changed the show's format from 30-minute standalone stories to multi-part serials. Dollar's cases were now broadcast 5 days a week in 15-minute episodes. CBS hired Jack Johnstone as head writer-director. Johnstone developed his serialized storytelling skills while working on The Adventures of Superman and perfected them on Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. Freed from the constraints of the 30-minute detective story, Johnstone and his writers were able to use the extended runtime to develop complex plots and characters, distinguishing Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar from other more formulaic detective shows.
The McCormick Matter was the program's debut serial, and Johnstone decided to assign writing duties to Jack Dawson, a nom de plume of E. Jack Newman. A prolific and highly regarded writer, Newman penned scripts for many of radio's best-remembered mystery programs, including The Adventures of Sam Spade, Box 13, Escape, Nightbeat, Richard Diamond, Private Detective, Rocky Jordan, and Suspense. Other notable contributors to Johnstone's era of the program were Robert Riff, known for his work on Dangerous Assignment, and Les Crutchfield, who wrote the classic Johnny Dollar Christmas serial, The Nick Schoen Matter.
Despite a favorable response from audiences and critics alike, the production costs for a five-day-a-week series proved too much for the network's ever-shrinking radio budget. In November 1956, after airing 55 serials, CBS turned the program to its original once-a-week 30-minute format. Bailey and Johnstone remained with the show, but the writing was on the wall. The days of dramatic radio were coming to an end.
In 1960, as a further cost-saving measure, CBS moved production of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, along with a significantly scaled-back version of Suspense, from Hollywood to New York. Bailey bowed out, preferring to stay in California. He was replaced briefly by Bob Reddick and later by Mandel Kramer. The final episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, The Tip-Off Matter, aired September 30th, 1962, followed immediately by the final broadcast of Suspense.
Before we introduce the story, a quick word about our recording process. In a departure from our usual approach, all three of us are listening to this story for the first time. Not only that, we're listening to it together and recording our thoughts immediately after hearing each episode. In this way, you'll get our real-time reactions to the story's cliffhangers, plot twists, and final resolution.
So now, let's listen to part one of The McCormick Matter from Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, first aired October 3rd, 1955.
It's late at night, and a chill has set in. You're alone, and the only light you see is coming from an antique radio. Listen to the sounds coming from the speaker, listen to the music, and listen to the voices.
From Hollywood, it's time now for Bob Bailey as
Johnny Dollar.
Mr. Dollar, this is Father Taggart. I'm calling you from Ossining. I'm one of the chaplains here at Sing Sing.
Oh, yes, sir. What can I do for you, Father?
Well, nothing for me, Mr. Dollar, but possibly for someone else. Michael Cairn, one of our inmates, asked me to contact you.
Michael Cairn?
Mm-hmm. You remember him? He wasn't sure you would.
Old-time grifter and con man who got tied up with an insurance fraud a few years ago, blonde fella?
Yes. Well, Michael wants to see you, Mr. Dollar. Could you possibly find the time to come up here?
Well, I don't know, Father. Is this something important?
It is to Michael.
Oh, well, look, I'll be in New York sometime next month. Maybe I'll get a chance to stop off.
Well, couldn't you possibly make it sooner?
What's the rush? He's going to be there quite a while, isn't he?
Not very long, I'm afraid. Michael is dying.
All right, Father, you can expect me.
Welcome to Johnny Dollar. Beginning tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Allied Casualty and Insurance Company Limited, Markham Building, Hartford, Connecticut. Attention, Ed Barth, Controller's Office. This is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the McCormick matter. Though you didn't authorize the investigation, Ed, I'm sure that once the facts are out, you will honor the following. Expense account, item one, $7.95. Train fare and incidentals, Hartford to Ossining, New York. I was admitted inside the prison and greeted by Father Taggart. He's a tall, mild-looking man, a Jesuit, I believe. He had a pass all ready for me, and he led me straight to the prison infirmary.
Just in here. Michael will certainly appreciate your coming, Mr. Dollar.
I hope it satisfies whatever's on his mind. I can't imagine what it would be. You know, it was my investigation and testimony that put him in here, Father.
He told me all about that, and I'm sure it has nothing to do with why he wants to see you. See, his lungs started to go about 2 years ago, and there's just been no way to arrest the condition.
Does he know how close he is?
Oh, yes. And he's not afraid to die. Here we are, Mr. Dollar.
Oh.
What?
Hardly the same man I remember, Father.
He's had it bad lately. Lost a great deal of weight.
Yeah. Asleep?
Yes. Michael. Michael.
Oh. Hey, Father.
I brought someone to see you.
What'd he say?
Hiya, Mike.
Oh. Thanks for coming. Thanks, Johnny.
Thank Father Taggart here.
He's an all right guy, Johnny. He's just like you. I always said you were the best insurance cop.
Here, what's all this?
I'm kicking out, Johnny. Didn't you tell him, Father?
He told me, Mike.
I guess I didn't live right.
I'll be back in a little while.
Thanks, Father.
You take it easy, Mike.
A lousy place to die, prison. But I ain't got my choice, thanks to you.
Well, it's just that you picked to do a couple of things that the law and some insurance companies didn't agree with, Mike.
I don't hold none of that against you. A guy does what he does. I don't know how to tell you this.
Maybe I better get the doctor. You shouldn't be talking so much.
No, wait. Johnny, look, you know I'm no crybaby. When the doctor gave me the news, I got to thinking. I ain't scared to blow out, you understand?
I know, Mike, I know.
It's just that I had a wife once, long time ago when I started out.
Oh?
Yeah, then I just kind of drifted out of her picture one day. Ain't got a cough drop, baby. Yeah, I guess it wouldn't cure what I got. Anyhow, I got to do something for her before I... Well, Johnny, I lay here and I get myself an idea.
Yeah, Mike?
Johnny, if there was some real easy money lying around, would you pick it up for me?
Depends on how clean it is, Mike, and where it's lying.
Sure. Well, it's clean, all right. You can find that out for yourself.
All right.
Now, listen. Till they moved me down here in the infirmary, I roomed upstairs with Jojo Panny. You know him?
No, don't believe I do.
And car thief from the Hay States. He got his sabbatical 3 weeks ago. Paroled.
Uh-huh.
Well, I've been in the camp with a lot of guys, but Jojo Panny takes the cake. He's got a little old 5-year trick to put in. This Jojo, he does it like a vacation. You know, a real picnic. Every time he gets a chance out in the yard, he's taking sun. So he don't get the color, see?
Yeah.
When they push him in with me, I notice this. And I get to going over in my head. Yeah. Why does a guy whistle in a cell block, Johnny? Why is he treating it like a rest home?
Short term. He's got something outside waiting.
That's it, baby. He's got something waiting for him outside. Something that he knows will keep safe. Money.
Thought you said this was legitimate, Mike.
It is. Now, wait. I didn't ask Jojo anything about this. No, I figured it out myself. Then a couple of times I hear him yelling in his sleep. McCormick, he yells. McCormick. Huh? Make sense now, Johnny?
Not yet.
The big heist, Johnny, the big heist. A few years ago, a rich guy named McCormick out on Long Island or someplace like that gets turned over for $100,000 worth of jewelry. You remember?
Vaguely.
Well, I'm thinking that Jojo Panny was in on it somewhere. Else why would he be singing and whistling and chilling himself around this fly trap for 5 years? Else why would he be talking about that when he's sleeping? McCormick.
Yeah. Maybe you've got something, Mike.
I know I got something, Johnny. And you got something, too.
Now, Mike, take it easy.
Oh, I'm all right. Don't you see? The insurance company must have a reward out. They always do. A reward.
Yeah, but Mike, look.
I tell you, Jojo is the ginzo that done the job. Or he knows who did it. So, you look into it. Work on it. Maybe turn up the stuff and get the reward. Good clean coin.
Yeah.
Yeah. Send half of it to my old lady, will you? You keep the rest yourself. What do you say? Huh? Will you?
Ego factati mihi ad apostolia, sedi tributa indulgentiam plenaria.
Mike Kern died 3 hours later. The last living thing he did was wink at me. Expense account, item 2, $14.20. Train fare and incidentals, Ossining to New York. I arrived at 2:15, dropped my bag off at the New Weston, and went over to the Metropolitan Police Station to find out what I could about the McCormick matter. It was all pretty much as old Mike had told me. A Julian McCormick living on Long Island had suffered a $100,000 jewelry burglary in 1951. 12 suspects had been arrested and released. The case was marked open and unsolved. Allied Casualty had been the insurance company involved.
This is the adjustment office. Frank Porter speaking.
My name's Johnny Dollar, Mr. Porter. I'm an investigator.
Oh, I think I've heard of you, Mr. Dollar. Yeah?
Wonder if you could give me a little information about a claim your company handled in 1951. A man named Julian McCormick out on Long Island.
Gee whiz, long time ago. What about the McCormick claim?
I might have some information on it. I don't know yet. It's a long chance. I'm at police headquarters, and I notice you investigated for the insurance company. I'd like to talk to you.
Yeah, sure, but it's kind of late today. Tomorrow, okay?
Well, you can tell me this right now. Is there any reward being offered?
Gee whiz, kind of folds my sails.
How's that?
Well, asking about a reward. You sound like you can make full recovery and want to make sure that you'll be paid for it.
Well, I said it was just a long shot. How about the reward?
Well, that's pretty standard with us on cases like this. Yeah, I think it's $7,500, something like that. I'm not sure. Where are you staying?
New Weston.
Well, I'll look it up, get the exact figure, and call you there. How'll that be?
Fine, thanks. That'll be fine. Before I left the police station, I turned out a mug on Jojo Penny. He was a big, broad-shouldered lad with plenty of beef and a list of petty convictions, four of them in New York State. The last one was for carrying concealed weapons. His parole status was good, though, and the parole officer furnished me with his home address. The Allen Hotel, rates day, week, or month, 115th Street.
It's open, it's open. Come on in.
Hiya.
Looking for Joe Penny.
Yes, sir. That's me.
My name's Johnny Dollar.
Yeah?
I just came down from Ossining. I saw a friend of yours up there, Joe.
Who was that?
Mike Cairn.
How's Mike?
Not so good. He died today.
It's too bad. He was a nice old coot. Kind of liked him.
Said if I ever saw you to say hello.
Uh-huh. He didn't give you my address.
No, I got it from the parole office.
You some kind of cop?
No, I work for an insurance company.
Oh.
Buy you a drink?
Sure. Why not?
Expense account, item 3, $4 even for drinks. I wanted to look at Jojo Penny and talk to him and figure out how I was going to go about getting information from him. And the more I saw and the more he talked, the more I wondered if whatever he might have said about the McCormick case in his sleep happened to some other McCormick. After all, a man with a long list of petty thieveries is hardly ever involved in a slick, big-time safe-cracking job. That takes another kind of talent, and one I was sure that Jojo didn't have.
So I've just been taking it easy and looking around. I figure I can get a job pushing a truck or maybe a cab if I'm lucky. Got to get something to do. Parole officer's kind of hard-nosed about things like that.
Yeah. Drink up. Want one more?
Oh, no thanks. Three's my limit. Like to keep in shape.
Sure. Say, you got anything to do?
Nothing special. Why?
Thought I might go out to Long Island later on tonight to say hello to an old friend of mine. If you haven't got anything to do, come on along.
You're okay, bub. Sure, why not? This friend of yours, he's an ex-con too?
No, he never did any time. Just a friend. Want to say hello is all.
Oh.
Rich fella. His name's Julian McCormick.
You're, very big with the hellos around here today, aren't you?
Anything wrong, Joe?
You probably are.
Why do you say that?
Nothing.
Ever know anyone named McCormick?
I knew a guy named Arnie McCormick once back in Salt Lake City. We were pals for a while.
Oh.
Yeah. Arnie was killed in the war. He'd got himself drafted in the infantry.
Maybe he's related to my friend Julian McCormick out on Long Island.
He wasn't related to anybody, not that bird. I'm leaving. I want to get up early tomorrow.
Why not come with me?
Thanks for the drinks.
He drifted off down the street and left me standing there. And one thing I was sure of, he had the name McCormick on his mind. Whether it was the right McCormick or the right case, I didn't know. Anyhow, he was my one big lead. So I was back at his hotel early the next morning and talking to the desk clerk.
Penny, did you say room 210?
Yeah, that's right.
Vamoose.
What?
He left bag and baggage last night.
Well, where did he go? What's his forwarding address?
He didn't say. Just left.
Now, here's our star, Bob Bailey, to tell you about tomorrow's episode.
Thanks. Tomorrow, there's living proof that a pretty girl can be just as dangerous as a pretty girl. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
That was part one of The McCormick Matter from yours truly, Johnny Dollar, from 1955, October 1955. So almost, I don't know when this goes up, but close to October, right? We'll be really close.
2055.
Yes.
Yes. 67 years later, we will be listening to this.
I'm really starting to warm up to Johnny Dollar. You know, I've had my issues with it, and all my issues with this have always been, why is it an insurance guy? You know, like, I've never been able to wrap my head around it. And the more I listen to it, the more I understand that, and the more I like this. And this, especially this first episode, has got me. I'm hooked right now. At this point right now, I'm having a great time. I do want to throw this out there. Every time he introduces himself, I just want somebody, because this is what I would do. If someone came up to me and said, I'm Johnny Dollar, I'd go, oh, come on. Just one person to go, no, your name's not Johnny Dollar.
Yeah, I'm Jimmy Two Bits.
Right.
Johnny Dollar, so what open mics can I see you at?
Right. But yeah, I'm hooked. This is a cool plot so far.
Yeah, it's a great entry into the story because you suspect that perhaps this criminal Mike has an axe to grind with Johnny.
Or it could be he knows that Johnny's on the up and up and will take care of his wife. He's the only guy he can trust.
Yeah, well, I tend to believe him once we get into the story. What I mean is when he gets invited down to the prison,
he
gets shown into the cell and it's like, is Johnny going to get shivved?
Right. But he still could be setting him up.
Yeah.
We don't know.
It's true.
Yeah, that's a great angle, right? The angle of I put you in jail.
Certainly avoids the repetitive structure that is a threat to a structure like,
right,
I'm an insurance investigator. So I got called in to investigate an insurance claim.
Do you know what this reminds me of, this beginning of this plot? It's like an episode of Rockford Files. An old buddy that comes back that needs his help with something, and it's, you'll make some money if you can just do this thing and then this other thing, and it's more convoluted than I'm letting on at the beginning, and Angel's going to cry a lot. Sorry, I got off tangent there. But doesn't it have a Rockford Files plot feel?
Secretly, in my heart, I'm referring to this series as the Destructible Mike Matter.
Right.
Nice callback.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's a joke for four of our Patreons. Do we have to talk anymore? Can I just hear a part two?
Nope. We have to say a few more things.
Okay.
I'm
going
to just make Eric wait to hear
what did he
part.
Say at the end? A woman is a woman unless she's a woman. Then she's a woman. I didn't understand what he was saying.
We'll learn that sometimes a pretty woman can be as dangerous as a pretty woman. And my favorite part is the big pregnant pause.
Like, right.
There, he dropped his script and there was a better line there. And he was like,
he just made that up.
Okay.
Sometimes when you're cold reading, you are anticipating, I thought this would be better.
Yes. I gave this way too much build-up.
Bob, what were you doing there? That the line was as dangerous as a machine gun. What the?
I dropped the script and just ad-libbed pretty woman.
Oh, good one. You're regular Wayne Brady, Bailey.
This was Bailey's first performance as Johnny Dollar? Did I follow that?
Yes, it's the first serial and his first performance.
Well, not bad.
Yeah, right? Way to come out of the gate swinging.
Yeah, I am fascinated by the $4 drinks.
You know what I was keeping track of, like, $7 train ticket, $22 train ticket, $4 of liquor. What are you drinking?
So that would be, I looked it up, $45 today. And I went, they still did not have much to drink. So JoJo said it was his 3-drink limit.
Mm-hmm.
I'm
assuming Johnny had 15 or something.
You're sitting here with us. We're listening to this live. Mm-hmm. This isn't a normal podcast. I'm watching. I'm right here. The hell do you mean you went and looked it up?
I didn't go to the library.
No, I know, but I've been watching
you. It takes 2 seconds on the phone.
Oh, is that what you were doing? I was playing Mahjong. And you took notes. Also, I love that you don't have paper, so you took notes on the back of one of your work checks.
the receipt to your check from
work.
It's
actually from the Minnesota Department of Revenue.
Oh, look at you getting money from the government.
Oh, it was a long fight. I won the battle, not the war, too.
You should have hired Johnny Dollar. He would have went and said, I'm representing Joshua Scrimshaw. Name's Johnny Dollar. And they would have went, come on.
We've had $4 worth of drinks, which is 45 today's dollars.
The other thing was that was odd to me, and I mean, I guess when you're in prison, most people in prison are in there for a long time, but like the idea of 5 years being somebody who's a short timer, mm-hmm. who's got a little extra yeah. bounce in the step, and I'd be, kill me now.
Right. To this day, the thought of, I just hope to God I don't A, get framed, or B, do something really accidentally stupid, because going to jail
and then
or
talk
prison,
about it on a microphone,
right.
a podcast.
Yep. I can't imagine how quickly I would just die from fear on the way in, like getting off the bus. They take you in a bus? That's what I heard. It's a bus.
Have either of you ever done the Alcatraz tour?
I didn't do the Alcatraz tour, but I thought about it when I was in San Fran.
Yeah, it really does. Like, oh, prison's not good.
Well, especially that prison.
If you're that risk aversive, then you're probably not going to commit the crime, so you don't have to worry about being
frightened. Did you hear what I said, though?
Prison.
I'm terrified that A, I'll get framed, B, I'll make a mistake that I didn't mean to. Like, that's what I live in fear. I'm not going to do anything intentionally to go to jail. My fear is, oh no, something has happened against my will and I'm in jail.
I've parked too close to a fire hydrant and now I'm doing time.
Alcatraz, here I come.
Can that happen?
One way to find out.
Because you should see where I'm parked right now.
So my question as we wrap up here so Eric can hear the next episode, because he's so excited, is do we have any predictions? Do we think mm-hmm. the wife that has long forgotten him is real? Because that's the little sentimental twist, like get the reward money and give half to my old lady.
This is what I was alluding to earlier, that I don't believe this, but it's something to hold on to, that the guy in jail, whatever his name was, who died,
Mike,
Billy COVID cough, is somehow nefarious still. He's gained our trust. We believe him to be telling the truth, that he's leaning on Mike or Johnny to help him out of this situation, that could be the twist. So that's.
But he's dead. So there is.
Yeah, but he's setting up the guy mm-hmm. that put him in there. Because he does say this interesting line. He says, yeah, I'm sorry, but you broke the line. He says, yeah, I guess we all got a job to do. It wasn't a forgiveness mm-hmm. or an understanding of, yeah, I did wrong and you got me. It was, I guess you had to do that, huh? So, I don't know. I'm just going to hang on to that in the back of my mind.
I think Mike's on the up and up. It's the other insurance guy that Johnny had to call and say, so I'm investigating your case and I want to know how much money I'll make off of.
That's a good point. Then there's the Jesuit priest.
Yep.
He seemed weird.
And then there's the pretty girl who's more dangerous than a pretty girl.
Is pretty girl like a euphemism for something that's really dangerous?
Tim, I have some things to tell you while we listen to this. I'm going to bring up an internet website and I'm going to teach you some things.
Okay.
All right. Until then.
Mahjong.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by John Dawson, the entire production is under the direction of Jack Johnstone. Be sure to join us tomorrow night, same time and station, for the next exciting episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking.